Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, and Dr. Paul Hall in Raising Expectations.
Hey, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and we're so grateful you took time to tune in tonight to this week's version of Raising Expectations, and we've got a wonderful guest tonight and a wonderful show. I think it's going to be a blessing, it's going to be informative, it's going to help you to do more to love people that are going to need your love and your care in your family and in your neighborhood. Again, if you tuned in for the first time, let me explain just a little. We are like a family on our team here, and I'm going to introduce to you who the folks are on our team. I want to start by introducing Dr. Paul Hall. Wave at him, Paul, if you see him there. And Dr. Paul's a retired pastor, teacher, educator. Also, Commander Rob and Nancy Hansen. Commander Rob was a Top Gun pilot, a flight pilot, and when the show is over, he's teaching me how to fly a very small Piper Cub. But also, I'm just kidding you, but also we have with us two very special people, Dr. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. Craig is a surgeon, a trauma surgeon, and a nutrition expert. And Stephanie, well, she is a wellness-educated coach and trainer. And like we said a week ago, she's going to work with all of us, and all of us will be running the mile under 4 minutes. So watch for us in the Olympics. Anyway, and Andrea Kelly, my sweet dear friend, she's not here tonight. She's with a very dear friend of hers, a young lady in on a vacation. So she's going to be missing tonight. So she always makes me look better on the camera. So if you just stuck with me tonight. But anyway, we're going to go from there. So now let me go on. Everybody say hi, okay?
Hi, okay.
Hi.
There we go. Just wanted you to know if you're listening. They are out there, so watch out. Here they come. Tonight, it gives me a real pleasure to introduce to you a very good friend of mine for many years. She and her husband are two very special people, and you're going to hear all about that in just a bit here. Laura and her husband David are from Dallas, Texas, Fort Worth area there, and they own the Encore Memory Daycare Centers. And prior to owning Encore, Laura Lester has always been an entrepreneur and owned and invested in many other small businesses. Because she has cared for loved ones with dementia in her family, this cause is especially dear to her heart. When the opportunity arose to invest in this venture, Laura and her husband gave capital to get it started. I had the privilege of praying with them at a dinner meeting on what they were going to do there. Laura has owned Encore Memory Daycare Center going on 10 years, and she began by supporting them. She never really thought she'd be running this business, but God had a plan for her life and all of this. Her experience in running Encore for the past 10 years has given her great desire to share her knowledge and experience with others and to help them incredibly when dealing with loved ones who are afflicted with this devastating disease. So without any further ado, and on behalf of all of our wonderful team that I so appreciate here, may I introduce to you Laura Lester. Laura, we are so glad you're with us tonight. If you'll just share a few words with us from your heart, and we'll go back and forth and have a great time. We're great students, and we can't wait to share back and forth with you. Hopefully, God will use us to encourage others through all the things you have to share. Laura, welcome to Raising Expectations.
Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate getting to know you. Nice people. I just want to ask first, does anybody here have anybody in their family that has dementia or know anybody that has dementia? Have you been in contact?
Yes.
Yes.
So you probably
I'll have some questions for you later.
Okay. Well, I hopefully have the answers. I've been dealing with this for 10 years, and we have a very, the way that we handle dementia patients is a little bit unique, but it's we have a very happy place, and it works out very well. We can keep our dementia patients happy, which is nice. So I do have some tips and strategies that I brought tonight to most people realize when they first start dealing with people with dementia that it is really counterintuitive. The way that you deal with your loved one is almost the opposite of the way you're used to dealing with your loved one. So whatever comes naturally, like trying to reason with them, trying to convince them of something, it all goes out the window, and you have to really learn dementia techniques in order to successfully deal with your loved ones. And so I have 10 years of experience. When I first started, my grandmother had dementia and she stayed with us. And really, David and I did everything wrong in dealing with her. And it's because we had no training and we were just flying by the seat of our pants. And she really became very mean. And now with my experience, I feel like if we had known then what we know now, I don't think she would have become mean. I think she would have been a much less frustrating life experience for us. So I do have a brother right now that has dementia, and I do use my techniques on my brother, and it's just night and day how much better it is. When I don't use my techniques, he's angry and difficult. When I do use my techniques, he's wonderful and loves me. So that's what I want to do, is share ways to deal with people with dementia that actually work. And I can say that they work because we've been doing it for 10 years. And
amen. That's great.
Amen.
Yes. Yeah. I can really, on each of the topics that I brought tonight, I can really talk for a long time. If you have any questions, feel free to ask me. But there's two main things that I would like to share. The first thing is, you really can't reason with someone that has dementia. Usually very early on in the disease, they lose their ability to reason. So if you are trying to convince them of something and you try to use reason and it's something that they don't want to do, it's just going to become frustrating for you and for them as well. So that's something that you need to know right up front, is reasoning is not going to be an easy thing to do with someone that has dementia.
Hey, Laura.
Yes.
Rob here. I'm just wondering if you could maybe elaborate a little bit on when the first symptoms show up, how you can recognize whether or not somebody has it.
Well, I tell you what, most people are in denial when it first starts. And it's just a natural reaction for family to think, oh, this family member is just irresponsible, or, you know, they're playing games with me or whatever. A lot of times it's very hard for a relative or someone that loves someone with dementia to recognize that this is happening. So a lot of times it starts happening way before people really know it. They lose their ability to, as I say, to reason. Thinking is difficult for them. They may ask the same questions over and over again. They may tell the same stories over and over again. That's a real clue. You know, everybody as we age kind of loses some of our memory. Like we forget where we put our keys and that kind of thing.
Amen.
You know, that's okay. That's not dementia.
We have little trackers on our keys so that when we lose our keys, we can find them as long as we have not lost our cell phone.
Okay, so if you find that you find your keys maybe in the freezer, or if you find your keys behind the drapes, then you may want to worry, because that means your brain isn't connecting correctly. So If you find them in a reasonable place, then that should be reassuring to you.
Yeah. Or how about the person that actually has the onset of dementia? Are they aware of what is happening to them?
Yes. Yes, they are. And the very, especially in the very beginning, they do realize that something's really wrong, but they don't want anybody else to know it. It's a very,
it's very frustrating.
Yeah. They're very fearful in the beginning, and in their mind, they're thinking, oh my gosh, if my loved one knows how bad this is, they're going to put me in a home, you know? So they try, they try to fake it. But 99% of them, I think, just try to fake it. They don't just come clean about it. And so
do you think that's the most common reason that they get angry, or is there something else, or is it different as it progresses?
There's a lot of different reasons that they get angry. They are frustrated not being able to do the things that they wanted to do before. And unfortunately, this disease strikes really brilliant people. I mean, I've got engineers and doctors and lawyers and CIA people, and I mean, just really brilliant people. So they're used to accomplishing things and being able to use their brain. So it's very devastating to them to realize that they cannot think as clearly as they wanted to think before. Right. So that's a cause of depression. It's a cause of frustration. Usually, though, the people become angry when the person that's dealing with them also recognizes that they have dementia and treats them like they recognize it. That's where the anger comes in. If you have an intelligent person that has accomplished a lot of things in their life and they are used to being treated with a great deal of respect, suddenly they're being talked to like they're a child. Think about it. You're going to be angry. It's going to cause anger. They know they're not children. They know they have a problem, but they know they're not children, and they really do want that respect. So,
and it's not necessarily limited to, you know, the real senior citizens, I understand, either. Not, you know, dementia can be an onset, at least, or the actual dementia itself can happen much earlier than a lot of people realize, too.
It can, yeah. I have a lady in my center right now that's in her 40s. Or like,
yeah.
It's rare, mostly in senior citizens. Most of my people or 70 and up, but on occasion you'll have early onset people with dementia, and those are very sad cases because they start kind of like everybody else, and then they progress very rapidly. So they tend to die really before. Some of the people that we deal with, the older people, they can live with dementia for many years and be very functional. So
now that's a good question. Do people actually die of dementia, or is it
more
of a mental thing or a physical thing?
Or the brain shuts down or something, which shuts everything else down?
The it's kind of like the mentally retarded folk, you know, that have chromosome abnormalities, similar, their brain forgets how to run some of their autonomic nervous system, their bladder, their swallowing. And so they lose those abilities, and they choke or aspirate, or they can't pee anymore, or all those things. It's just the brain loses its memory of how to take care of its own body.
Right.
Crazy.
Right.
Okay.
Fortunately, if it strikes later, they're more inclined to die of something else before they go all the way through the disease. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a good thing, you know, because you don't. Dying of dementia is, to me, harder than, say, if someone had a heart attack or something. So usually you see the people that get it younger are the ones that die of it.
Now, when you mention, Laura, dementia, does that include Alzheimer's disease?
Yeah, Alzheimer's is the main cause of dementia.
So Alzheimer's causes dementia?
Yes. Okay. Yes, there's several causes.
I didn't know if there was a difference between the two or not.
Well, every case is different, honestly, but there's a lot of similarities, but dementia is dementia, and there's different reasons that people have dementia. Sometimes, some dementia is even reversible, which is great.
Wow.
Or dementia symptoms, not real dementia. Sometimes people will have dementia symptoms. That's why we always encourage. If they come to my center and say, I'm having all these symptoms and they sound just like dementia, I encourage them, go to the doctor first and just find out for sure if this is dementia, because there are other things that look like dementia that can be reversed. So,
what kind of tests do they do to determine that?
Well, you know what? I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
So I'm
sure. Yeah, I can tell. So, you know, chemistry, your electrolytes can be off. That's simple. Alcohol causes damage to more to your cerebellum, so you become ataxic or you can't walk, but it also atrophies your brain. Multi-infarct, meaning you've had some either stroke from clot in your heart that went up to your brain, or you got a narrowing in your carotid artery that's throwing clot. But there's a whole bunch of other reasons other than just the unnatural, you know, deterioration of your brain function.
Yeah. Well, Laura, what are some of those tips you've got to give us some ideas how we can deal with them?
Okay. Well, if I can't teach you anything else, it's important to know that emotions are contagious with dementia patients.
Awesome.
But being a caregiver for someone with dementia is very stressful. But if you become stressed, they're going to become stressed as well. They're going to catch that emotion. Mm-hmm. So one huge I would pass on is try to always be upbeat with a dementia patient. Be positive, be excited. If they get angry with you, we have a tip at the center. If one of our guests gets angry with one of our staff members, they just hold up a finger and say, I'll be right back, and then they disappear. They go find another staff member, tell them what the situation was. The other staff member goes, changes the subject. So if you're all alone with a dementia patient and they become angry with you, it's always important to keep your emotions good. If you're feeling the anger as well, remove yourself from the situation, go to the restroom, psych yourself up, come back, change the mood, change the subject. Because their memory is short. If you picture someone with dementia, if you picture a tape recorder, it's not that they can't push replay. It's that it never recorded in the first place.
Yes, yes.
So they have lots of long-term memories from when their brain was working. But they don't, right now, they can't create new memories. So if you change the subject and change the mood, they'll forget why they were angry with you in the first place. So Ed, that is really a great tip. If you have more than one person in the house with a dementia patient, you disappear, the other person comes up and says, hey, you want to see the flowers I just planted? They look great. Change the subject and change the mood. And that will, if you can keep the mood elevated, it's magic. And music is also magic. I would, with a dementia patient, I would always have some music playing in the background, because music works every part of the brain. And at our centers, we try to keep their brains active as much as possible and their bodies engaged. And so we have a lot of music. Music is super important. So any questions about emotions being contagious?
I know you're based in Fort Worth, but it seems like you have such great knowledge and experience. You know, my grandmother had Alzheimer's for 14 years. My dad helped take care of her. They had someone that came in and helped take care as well with my grandfather. But it makes me think you have so much to share. Do you do like virtual coaching things, or do you have a book, or like,
because well, you know,
really helpful.
I'm gonna write a book. That is on my bucket list. As soon as I have time, I'm writing a book. But we do coach. Like when I have people that come to the centers, we get to know that individual, because every case of dementia is individual. They'll have a lot of similarities, but you really just try this technique. If it works, great, share it. If it doesn't, try the next technique. If it works, share it with everybody, because they have a short-term memory. Therefore, you can literally use the same technique over and over and over with the same person. You can tell them the exact same thing over and over, and it works like a charm. I have a gentleman, one of my centers, that has a very short memory, and he gets anxious and he wants his wife to come pick him up. So, and this is another thing that I need to tell you, you have to get into their reality. You cannot, I don't know if you've ever heard the term therapeutic fibs or therapeutic lies. And we as Christians do not like to lie to people. We do not want to fib to them. Yes. But literally, the way we explain it to our family members is you're not lying to them. Their brain is lying to them. And if you try to convince them of the truth, they're not going to accept it. And your life is going to be more difficult, and their life is going to be more difficult. So our role as a caregiver for someone with dementia, get into their reality and just go with it. So you find what works for that person that will calm them down. So a lot of times I will tell them if they're anxious and they want their wife to pick them up and they want their wife, tell them your wife just called. Because if they're thinking about their wife, and I tell them that their wife just called, that means to them, my wife is thinking about me too, and she cares enough to call. So it's calming to them. So I give them that, and then I tell them, you will be coming to pick you up at whatever time that she's going to come. This one gentleman, if she's coming at 4 and it's 11:30 in the morning, he'll get very upset if I tell him he's going to have to wait till 4. So I tell him she will be here in 30 minutes to pick you up. He's fine with 30 minutes. He can wait 30 minutes. So I literally tell him that all day long. Every 5 minutes he'll ask me when his wife's going to pick him up. Huh? Oh, Bob, she'll be here in 30 minutes. Why don't we do this while we wait? It'll pass the time. And then we put him in an activity that's engaging his brain. So, and during the activity, he may ask, when's my wife going to pick me up? We'll tell him the same thing over again because he keeps forgetting. So keeping the mood upbeat and telling them what they want to hear will make your life much better.
Sounds like patience, right? If you're caregiving.
Yes.
Yeah. And I want to tell you something else. It's much easier for me to take care of your loved one than it is for you to take care of your loved one. Because I have a brother right now with dementia, and I'm telling you, taking care of him is way harder for me than taking care of someone that I just met. You know, because I know what he's lost. I know who he used to be. And I'm still in a kind of a stage of grief when dealing with him as well, where I can meet a new person that I don't know that has dementia. I have all this training and I don't know what they've lost. I know who they are today. So I can love them for who they are today, and I can give them the respect that they deserve, and we can just have a great day. You know?
Yes.
Sometimes I lose my respect for my brother. He's my brother. And I know.
So I think that's true with everything, though. When you're too close to someone, it's not as easy to do the right thing sometimes.
It's not the same. Yeah. So, but I can advise you that if you're living with someone with dementia, just try to keep it upbeat. And like, for instance, with my brother, he got on a kick where I stole his inheritance, and it was the worst, because I was in control of his money. I was the worst person on earth, and he's very charismatic. And if you met him, you may not even know he has dementia. You know, unless you spend a little time with him and he tells you the same stories over and over, you may not even know. So he would tell everybody that he met that I am the evil person that stole his inheritance. And literally, people were thinking I'm the Wicked Witch of the West. And so, and this is another technique I can teach you that I tried with him that really worked. And that is apologies. Apologies work amazingly well. They don't even have to make sense. So with him, when this "you stole my inheritance" thing first started, I was like, you know, I don't even have a life because of you. What are you doing? You know, I was I would never do that to you, and fighting with him about it. And then one day a light bulb just went off, and I was like, you know, I work with dementia patients, and I know what works. Why don't I just try it? So I'm like, Dan, if I did that, and I looked him in the eye, and I was sincere, I am so sorry. I would never do that on purpose. I'm going to check into this, and if I did that, I'm going to make this right. And that's exactly what I said to him. And he softened and said, that's okay, Laura. I said, I love you, Dan, and I would never do that on purpose. I am so sorry. Yes. Okay, that apology did not make sense. If you didn't have dementia, you would say, she would know if she stole my inheritance. But he didn't know because he can't reason. So he noticed that I am apologizing to him, and I'm truly sorry, and he's okay with that. So then he's like, that's okay, Laura. You make it right. I forgive you. And we were friends. Mm-hmm. So now, every time he gets on this kick, I do this very same thing. I give them that same apology, and he forgives me every time. So apologies, if they're sincere and with love, they work just like magic. I apologize all day long at the center to people. I'm like, I am so sorry. But they're anxious because maybe their loved one hasn't gotten there. And I'm like, I am so sorry. I should have told you. I sent her out to get to, in the van, to pick somebody up. She should be back. But I should have asked you first. I am so sorry. Be mad at me, not her. You know, and they always forgive me. Apologies are magic as well. So...
Excellent. You know, Laura, it sort of brings up an interesting point. You may want to elaborate a little bit on your daycare program, because I'm sure a lot of people that may be listening aren't even aware that it isn't necessary that you have, you know, 24/7 nursing home care for those who are suffering from dementia.
Yeah, we have two daycares in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and you know, hopefully eventually we'll grow, but I'm only growing as I have people that can do it the right way. So I'm not going to grow really fast. I want everybody trained the way we do it, because we're successful the way we do it. Mm-hmm. And I know that my people that we're dealing with, it's at the end of their life. So if they don't wake up tomorrow, we know the last time we saw them, they were happy. So that's kind of how we want to do our business. But, yeah, in the beginning stages, especially, there's really no reason to put them in full-time care. It's hard for the person at home to deal with their loved one, because they do have a background. They do want to do things. It's just very frustrating. And the caregiver needs a break. The caregiver cannot do this 24 hours without. I mean, statistics show the caregiver goes before the dementia patients in a lot of cases, or in most cases. So what we do is we, from 7:30 in the morning to 6 in the evening, we offer, right now our hours are reduced because of the COVID thing, but when we're under normal operation at 7:30 in the morning to 6 in the evening, they can come and bring their loved ones during the day, and then the loved one's happy. The dementia patients is very happy. They're making friends. They're telling the same stories over and over. The person that's listening to the story has forgotten they heard it. So they react the way they did the first time they heard it. They make friends. They do that. We have parties. They have just a great experience. We stimulate their, we do everything that we do is fun, but it's also based on the latest research in memory care. So we're stimulating their brain, because our philosophy is use it or lose it. So we keep them mentally stimulated, and the latest research also says that exercise is very good for this disease. So we exercise 6 times a day. I mean, we have them up and exercising, and it's just amazing the difference in they sleep better at night, and they're more alert, they're more aware, they're more engaging at home with their loved ones once they get there. It's just amazing how different they are at home. So
I wish we had heard you a while back, Laura, because as a pastor, and I know Dr. Hall is here with us, Paul, as pastors, sometimes we feel totally in the dark on what to do to try to love, you know. The last thing we want to do as pastors is quote a verse to somebody and say, there, be healed. You know, that's the work of the Lord to do in lives. But I remember driving back from Texas all the way after I left Faith Christian there on Christmas vacation. Students were all set. Drove all the way back around the clock all night to see my mom who had Alzheimer's. And when I went there, I sat down and watched, I think, 6 episodes of Gunsmoke, which was her favorite. And then I got up to go in the other room to get her a cup of hot tea. And I heard her say to the lady next to her, you know, I have a son. My number one son, Joe, is a pastor. And he doesn't love me anymore. He's promised he never comes to see me. He never talks to me. Of course, we called and was there all the time. And what you said about your brother, it really hit me. And Paul Hall, I think, has some stories there, too, where I had to go in the other room and think, Lord, what am I saying now? First of all, it didn't really hurt because I know Mom and I know what she's going through. But secondly, I felt totally inept at what to say, except that I love you, Mom. Hey, I'm here, Lum. What do you want in this tea? And you ready for a second one? You got your second cup. I put my arm around her, and it did seem to change everything. But that was the most devastating time for me at that point. Or my dad, when she came in and screamed and threw him on the floor out of bed and said, who are you? Get out of my room. You know, that was tough after 64 years of marriage. And what you shared with us at that point, that's a great help for me to understand. And I think we all, don't you think, folks, that's a great help, the way you dealt with that, to give us insight on that. Thank you very much.
I can explain to you, too, why they do that, why they don't recognize you. A lot of times with dementia, they actually go back in time and envision themselves as a younger person. So they look at you, they may be in their 30s. And so they know they love you, but who are you? You may be, maybe he's my uncle, maybe he's my grandfather. You know I have this love for you, but I'm not quite sure who you are, but you can't be Joe. You can't be my little boy that's 8 years old. You're an old man, and you're way older than I am. So whenever she looked at your father and said, who are you? Get out of my bed. She thought, who is this old man that's in my bed? You know, and why is he here? It was frightening for her.
Yes.
That happens, unfortunately. It's very sad. The reason they don't recognize their family is they are at a time in their past. That's why a lot of times they'll say, I want to go home. Because they're in their home that they've lived in for 30 years, but they're envisioning that their home is where that maybe their childhood home or where they lived when they first got married. And that's the home they want to go to. And they've got responsibilities that they have to take care of. Why are they here in this strange place with these old people, you know?
Yes.
So that's another place where you need to get into the reality and just their brain is lying to them. So you have to say, yeah, we're going to get you home. We're going to get you home. Don't worry. The only reason you're here is, you know, whatever they'll accept. Your house flooded. You know, you're staying with us for a few days. You know, time makes no difference to them. If you say a few days, you can say that for years. They won't know. You know, they lose that concept.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Had a guy that came to the center that he came really for 2 years, and people would say, where do you live? And he'd say, well, I live in Pennsylvania. I'm just visiting my son for a few days. He said that for 2 years, you know, we just went with it. That was his thing.
Amen. Blessed him.
Have you ever heard the term sundowning?
Yes.
You know what that is? You know, that's difficult also for people. And we're open during some of that sundowning phase. During normal non-COVID hours, we're open until 6. So people start going through their sundowning. And in the wintertime, they sundown a little earlier. If it's raining, you can have sundowning all day long.
What is sundowning?
We see it in hospital patients for a number of reasons. One is they're on medications, so they get more confused. And it's an afternoon, evening loss of where they are. They get confused, and then they can do all sorts of things with the confusion. So
they Yeah, and they become anxious. They become anxious. If it's raining outside, they can be anxious really all day. Whenever we see it's a bad weather day, we're all prepared. Okay, this is going to be a crazy day because people will be more anxious than usual. And so the way we deal with it is we keep them busy. If they are busy, their sundowning symptoms are way minimized. They're minimized so much because if they're bored, they are exacerbated. So we just give them something to do. Here we go. Here, let's sort this. We'll give them buttons to sort and say, we need yellow here, red here, blue here, and tell them it's a big project that we're doing. And it's very important that this be done by, you know, and they're contributing. They're doing their big project here. So, but just keeping them busy, give them laundry to fold, give them something to do, and sundowning will not be as bad. That's, you know, just watching them pace around is very stressful for everyone. Give them something to do that helps.
What's your favorite mental activity to do with the patients?
What's
your favorite mental activity or stimulation for them? Like, what are some of your favorite things to do with them?
Well, during normal non-COVID, we dance. Believe it or not, physical activity is wonderful. And so we have dances twice a week, which that's my favorite because these older people can dance. I mean, they really can. They're way better than we could. So so we do that. We do mind stimulating. Like, well, I have a big crossword on the wall. And so nobody's intimidated because if you know the word, you can shout it out. If you don't, you just don't say anything. And so we do a big group crossword every day. We do a lot of trivia stuff, and it's pretty simple trivia that, you know, who said, ask not what your country can do for you, what you can do for the country, you know, that they have long-term memories. So they know those answers. So we'll give them basic trivia questions that they know, that they can feel good about themselves because they do know, because it's still in their long-term memory. And we really feel like if we stimulate their long-term memory, they're not going to lose it as quickly as if they're just sitting home watching TV. That's our philosophy. I can't prove it, but I think that, you know, so that's what we're doing.
Dr. Paul?
Yes, sir. I'm here, Joe.
I know you're there, and I know you've got things. You and I have talked about this. Have you got a question you'd like to run by, or thought run by, Laura?
You know, Laura, it's really nice to meet you. Nice to hear what you say. I am such a victim of note-taking, so I've been just jotting notes left and right. My mom is 89 years old. My dad will be 92 in a couple weeks. They're in fairly good physical health, but I do know that my mom, she broke her shoulder not long ago and was in a rehab facility, and they made a notation that they noticed that she had dementia, and when she first read that, when she read the report at some point, it floored her, and she kept saying, do you have dementia? And things happen. I live 2,000 miles away from, but I call them every morning, you know, just how are you doing, what's going on, and just check in. I hear the same stories over and over and over. I have found, interestingly enough, I love your slogan. I love your slogan, word and laughter, best medicine. I read that on your website. And one of the things that I do to try and cushion my own heart maybe and to help my mom is to get her to laugh, and she has a real keen sense of humor, but she loves to laugh, and I can tell immediately when she answers the phone where she is emotionally. I can just sense that right away, and I know that I've got it cut out for me to, so I'll tell her stories, and it's really fun because I remember the stories that she doesn't remember, and when I do tell them again, she just laughs, has the best time in the world, you know. So we have those delightful conversations as it goes along. Now, when you have family members, I would assume that people seek you out, right? And and go to your centers. My mom and dad are both, they were raised in the Midwest, very independent people. They've made a statement. My dad said, if you try to put me in a home, I will make sure I never get there. You know, that's his attitude. Mom is,
that's most people. Yeah.
And mom is frightened to death of that somebody's going to put her away. She cannot deal with that. Do you have any insight about how you kind of deal with that kind of issue?
Yeah, basically that is 99% of all the people. Like when they come to my daycare in the very beginning, that's what's in their head is this is some sort of nursing home. And if I say I like this or I say I'm enjoying my day, I'm never going to see my family again.
Glad to say too.
We have to get past that that fear for them. And it usually takes, to do this for 10 years, it usually takes 10 visits. Not for everybody, but for the most people, it's 10 complete visits. And once they've been there 10 times, then they relax and they realize they're going to get picked up every day, and then they start having fun. But there's usually a certain level of anxiety for about 10 visits. That's why we, at this point, we encourage people, just get those 10 visits out of the way the first 2 weeks. Bring them 5 days in a row, 5 days in a row. And but for most people, they're going to be fine after that. And so that's the strategy we've been using for the last year, and it's worked wonders. They come 2 weeks, and then they can back off a little bit if they don't want to come that often. But what we do is we try to give them a purpose while they're there. Most of my men actually think they work there. Most of my women think they're doing volunteer work. Some of the women think that this is the church, because I have a lady that always led music in her church, and I mean she leads the music. So we have a devotion every morning, and she's my music leader. And so we do the little devotion, and then we pray for everyone. We ask for prayer requests, and we do prayer, and then we have music for a good 45 minutes, and she leads it. So that's her volunteer. Because she's our volunteer, she gets free lunch and, you know, all the meals free, and she's very friendly to everybody. She welcomes them. She's part of us. She's one of our volunteers. So everybody, even if you have a disease, you still need a purpose. People want to be productive. They want to have a purpose. So we try to give everybody a purpose. You know, I have always a photographer. So I gave him a camera. He broke my cameras, my first three cameras I gave him. So I started buying cheap cameras for him. But but he got some great pictures, seriously. He had a really pleasant personality, and he could get natural smiles out of my guests. And so I've got just marvelous pictures from him. So, but he was our photographer. That's what he did. So people just need a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Laura, I have like one or two more questions for you.
Okay.
I've been touched deeply with dementia and Alzheimer's in my family. My other question is, it inherited?
Yeah, it tends to run in families. I can't say that everybody in family that gets it, but it does tend to run in families. So
okay,
that's what is it
generational, or does it skip generations in your experience?
Well, I've only been doing this for 10 years, so
yeah.
I don't know. You know,
ask
the doctor.
Yes, that was my next question.
It's not like male baldness. It doesn't skip.
My grandmother had it. My aunts had it. My mother had it. So it's like, he's doomed.
I got this
covered. So here's the thing.
Keep his mind going.
My grandmother had it. My mother died early. And my brother has it. But I don't have it. And I did have the 23andMe thing done, and I was very fearful, and I prayed before I opened the results, and it says I don't have the gene, so I'm going
to bless you.
Believe God that I'm not going to get it.
So there's a gene that is identified that may be an indicator that you're likely to get dementia.
Yeah.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah, I was very fearful to do it. I was very fearful.
How about from a, and this may be more for Dr. Craig and Stephanie, I'm wondering, you know, because we're all in sort of the generally the same age category.
They're young. We're old.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, are there things that people can do, you know, short of not using aluminum underarm deodorant or some conspiracy theory things that involve nutrition or, you know,
pills
or, you know, some.
Please?
There you go. Are there means through either nutrition or better health practices that can either delay if you have, say, a genetic predisposition towards it, or are you just doomed?
All my family members were in their 90s.
If you Google Mind Diet, there are some evidence-based diets that minimize certain things that may contribute and optimize things that may help serotonin and other dopamine levels and those kind of things. So, and they're used for not just dementia, I think Parkinson's and ALS and all those other horrible neurologic things where your mind deteriorates in different ways.
Yeah. I mean, are there specifics that you have?
Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just asking maybe more specifics on that. Omega-3s or...
There's really no way to dodge bullet. It's in your genes, right?
Stephanie, did you have something you were saying there?
So do you know what Laura is saying about making it the effects less or it take longer is physical and mental. I know the more mental stuff you do, like he's saying, don't just sit down and watch TV when you're retired. You need to be stimulated for your body and your mind, and that. I know there are studies out that show that helps.
Mm-hmm.
And also getting enough sleep, very important. There's studies about that as well. A lot of people that didn't get enough sleep have dementia, doctors that work all night.
Be careful, Craig. Be careful there. We're listening to Craig. Dear friends, we've got about 4 minutes. In 4 minutes, what kind of questions? Something you want to run by Laura? Laura, this is really great. Thanks.
I'm done. I got mine in.
I would love to say to you, Laura, that thank you for taking something that I know is painful and binding it to your heart and making it purposeful.
Yeah. And it's very
the other important thing I think is, you know, get out there, somehow get you out there to, because I think people wait till that person's run away and the police brings them home or they can't get dressed anymore. And this helps before all that. So it's more preventative, and that's a great thing. So thank you.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think too, I mean, it seems to take as big a stress it's as big a stressor on the caregiver in the family, than it is if somebody's professionally trained and deals with it 24/7, or at least knows enough and is educated enough to know how to do this. So this has all been very useful and very helpful. Thank you so much, Laura.
But once we get to know the guests, we do share with the family member things that may work at home for them as well, which is helpful. And my last tip is always say yes, never say no. If they want to do something, you can always say, hey, that's a great idea. Why don't we do this first? Then we'll get, you know.
Good. Feed me. Okay, Mom, I'll feed you again.
Redirect. Yes. Never say no. That's your no.
Amen. Anybody have a quick thought? I'm going to close with one. If we don't, we all set?
We're good.
Well, I'll give you a little, just a little thought, Laura. I liked what you said about the dancing. The last time I saw my mom and dad dance, they can dance. It made me cry. I was overwhelmed with what they could do. Being a Baptist pastor, we were taught that praying knee and the dancing foot cannot be on the same leg. So dancing was frowned upon, kind of thing like that. The approach to life, though, I really loved your approach. It really touches my heart about the being upbeat, and I love what you said about always say yes and never say no. That's just simple little things make such a vast difference, such a huge difference in
don't
people's
argue
lives.
With them.
So thank you mm-hmm. for what you're doing.
Yeah. I'm watching this clock, and this has been such a great one. I know all of us, as you are people of faith. We love the Lord. We're thankful for his presence in our life. And I just love what it says in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 3, we're God of all comfort. Our goal here, and I know yours has been, since I've known you, and you worked with seniors I had the privilege of working with, to comfort them. You're an extension, Laura. You are, and all of your staff, of the comfort of God to people who need understanding, care, and comfort. Rob, all of us, Paul, Craig, Stephanie, Nancy, we want to be like that. That's why we're here now. We want to extend that comfort in verse 3, where he extends his comfort to us, but you've helped us to understand more what God's doing, that we might be a comfort to others. So
it's all about serving others.
That's right. That's it, Rob. And that's why we've come together, Laura. And if you're listening in tonight to our program, we're here because we care about people. And we want to cover all areas, finances, family, faith, even freedom of who we are and fun, all these things. We really believe God has a purpose, and we want to be an extension of that love. And it counts with other people. All right. Craig, everybody good. Everybody get something they got to share. You're all so terrific. I'm so blessed to know these people. They're just a blessing to my life, Laura. And we all think you are a blessing. Everybody get blessed by Laura tonight?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. We want you back, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah. I do have a lot more.
Oh, yeah. That's why we want you back. Yeah.
We'll bring you back. We're going to do this again. Well, we're on every day of the week. Oh, that's a scary thought, isn't it? But when we do more of this, we'll have you on. And yeah, I know. We'll do a little more with that, and we'll try very much to come through on that. So, by the way, I do need to let you know very quickly. I've only got like 40 seconds, but we sure could use your help in funding this program. If you go to our website, it's bbsradio.com/raising expectations. There's a button there, and you just push it. It's a wonderful button. It says donation on it. And if you'd be led of the Lord in your heart to help us prayerfully help others, if you push that button, if you give $5, you can give $1. If you can give $10, you want to give $50,000, that's great too. But
or $1 million.
Yeah, or $1 million. Anything you could give would surely help our program and keep us on the air. So on behalf of all of our team, we are a team. We love people. We love God. Laura, we pray for you, and we'll pray for David, and we'll pray for you. We covenant to pray for you. We'll have you back, like Rob said. All right? So God bless you. God bless. Encore and onward and upward. Fight the good fight, as Brother Clark told us last week, Captain Clark, Alan Clark said to us. We'll fight the good fight till he comes again. Anybody, let's all say goodbye to Laura and everyone listening. And God bless you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
We love you.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.